Welcome to The Wolf Den, the podcast about the business and people of podcasting.
I'm Chris Bannon.
I'm Lex Friedman.
And today our guests are Dan Meisner and Stephen Pratt from Pacific Content.
But before we get to Dan and Stephen, first, we're going to talk a little bit about shows we're jealous of, where we highlight shows that aren't necessarily our shows, but that we love. Do you have a show, Chris?
Well, in fact, I'm going to be very selfish today.
And oh, no, you're going to pick Today Explain, aren't
you? I am indeed, because I did a little bit of work on it. I managed Sean years ago at Studio 360. I think Today Explained is one of the most exciting things I have heard in podcasting. And I think Nishat Kurwa and Allison Rocky and Irene Noguchi and Sean have all done a fantastic job. This is day two. I haven't even heard the second show. I'm just talking about the first show.
That it was really good.
When we recorded this, aired yesterday, Monday. I think it's lively, smart, and fun, and it is full of information. It's not dull. That seems like an important thing to say. And I think it's a great use of my afternoon time.
And yes. And it was a 20-minute commitment, and it made me feel informed while also amusing me. I like that.
So this is a shameless self-promotion yes. segment, but I would say I'm really, really proud of everyone who did that work.
You should be. I was going to pick Today Explained. So instead, I'm going to pick a show that I really enjoy that we have nothing to do with, hosted by our friends Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. It's called Due by Friday. It is a weekly challenge show. Each week they decide, hey, for next week, we want you all to do this thing. And the episode that finally converted me into a listener was you had to do a magic trick by next week. And none of them were magicians, so they had to learn how to do magic. They had to figure out a way they could do a magic trick in podcast form. Sometimes their challenges are really intense.
For instance?
Sometimes it's like, you're going to learn how to do X number of push-ups by the end of this week, or you're going to develop a new hobby by the end of this week. And it can be hard, or you're going to get cut out certain foods, like cut out carbs. It's a great show. And I believe they do it entirely independently. There are no ads. Unmonetized, but it is quite entertaining.
I think Merlin Mann is a podcast magician. I have loved everything he's ever been on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's great. He can, like our own host, Matt Gourley, Merlin can have conversations with himself, which I think is what makes him entertaining.
Exactly. Well, we should get to our guests.
Do you have shows you're jealous of, Stephen and Dan?
I do. And just in keeping with the Today Explained, self-promotion thing, I would like to self-promote for you.
Oh, good.
I love that you have Seth Godin hosting a podcast now with Akimbo. It's a mid-roll show. I love, love, love Seth Godin. I've always loved him. He just, all his messages really resonate with me. And in a weird way, his philosophy is a big part of our philosophy as a company. So the fact that you have a podcast talking about how to make change in the world and opt-in permission marketing and all that sort of stuff, I love it. And I'm also going to be a total dork and just say I'm also envious of Wolf Den.
Oh, my goodness.
Because as people I say this in all seriousness. As a podcasting company, we have always talked like, why don't we have a podcast? It's because you're already doing the podcast that we would be doing. And in some bizarro universe, Wolf Den with Chris and Lex would be Pacific Pod with Dan and Steve. And it's not. And so I'm jealous.
You have two middle-aged white guys. You could do this show.
Exactly.
There isn't rocket science.
So we're thrilled to be in the show and jealous that you had the idea for the show first.
Well, thank you.
We're going to say, welcome to the Wolf Den, a Pacific Content show about the business and people of podcasting.
And what about you, Dan? Yeah. What's on your listening agenda?
I would like to second Lex's recommendation for Dubai Friday. They have taken the patronage model to the next level with their website. I think it's giveusyoureffingmoney.com, which is a brilliant
But fully spelled out. They
site.
Say fucking, which we can say on this show.
Okay. But a show that I've been listening to lately, it's not a new show, but I am deeply jealous of it. It's The Butterfly Effect with John Ronson.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm jealous, of course, because they've got John Ronson doing this really interesting show. But the thing I'm deeply jealous of is sort of the data and the editorial insights that can be gleaned on platforms like Audible's Originals or, Stitcher or any, Spotify, these companies that are doing original programming, but also have, ownership of the full stack. So they know how people are using these shows and when they're being consumed, and they're using that to build better and better, better shows. So I'm jealous of the back end.
We would tell you that information, Dan, but then we'd have to kill you.
And I do appreciate the shout out to Akimbo.
Yeah.
Man. Seth Godin.
That was very lovely.
As we said, our guests today are Stephen Pratt, the principal and co-founder of Pacific Content, and Dan Meisner, who's the head of audience development, as well as a host and story producer. And Stephen, why don't you tell us, what is Pacific Content? Explain it to our listeners.
So we are a super weird business. And I think any company that just does podcasting is already kind of a weird business. But we're weird inside of that. We don't have a network. We don't make original shows. And we don't sell ads. The only thing we do is that we make podcasts with brands. But they're not what you think they are. They're not infomercials or pieces of marketing. It's more helping brands think and act like media companies to make shows that people genuinely love listening to that are competitive with an original show from a podcast network.
And why do brands want to be media companies? Like, I'm really curious about what switch gets flipped at Procter & Gamble that says, suddenly, I need a podcast.
I think there's probably a bunch of different reasons, and it depends on the client. But the core one is, if you know, and this is just my own opinion on this, but a lot of traditional media doesn't work anymore, like in terms of creating things that people don't like, that they have the option to skip or bypass or ignore. And there's been a long-standing agreement for audiences to be able to say, you know what, we will put up with the stuff that we don't really want because we know that that's how we get the shows that we really love. Mm-hmm. The opportunity is there now for brands to realize, like, why don't we just make things that people love and build our own audience and be able to have a relationship with people? That's kind of the only way to reach them. And like, that's where I go back to the Seth Godin, is it's permission-based. And particularly for a podcast, if you want to reach them, they have to subscribe. Like, if you make a crappy show, no one's going to subscribe past the first episode. So the idea of building a long relationship where people love you for making something that is awesome and that creates value in their life, I think makes a ton of sense for all sorts of companies.
Do you find you have to convince the companies you're working with that they don't want to make an infomercial? Does it take some work for them to get over this notion of, we should make a podcast, and I'm only using Slack because I'm sure they didn't say this, but we should make a podcast about how great Slack is at letting teams communicate. Like, do you have to talk brands out of that? Is that challenging?
Well, it depends on what the goals coming in are. So, like, I think, you know, podcasting is a really interesting industry that if you're interested in short-term sales in the next quarter, direct response advertising is phenomenally effective in podcasting. It's the worst, you know, it's the worst reason to do an original podcast because it's not going to drive sales in the next quarter. It's going to build you a long relationship with people over years. And we can talk to people about that very quickly when they come in and kind of direct them, you know, away from making a podcast if they don't have the right fit. Slack, you know, you bring up, were the first client we ever had, and they were instantly amazing about how they deal with customers and think about things, where they want every single brand experience and every touch point with a potential customer to be phenomenal. And so they don't ever take your email address and put stuff up behind gates, you know, to be able to put you into CRMs to start spamming you with emails. Everything is designed to be simple and awesome. And a great podcast is bang on with that strategy.
I want to figure out how you and Dan got together in just a second, but while we're on this, Stephen, I'm curious, does your process work better with digital-first companies because they understand their relationship to the audience perhaps differently because of the environment in which they were grown? I'm curious if you have to take a different approach if it's, let's say, you know, Macy's department stores or someone like that.
The business definitely started more in Silicon Valley and San Francisco with digital startups. I think precisely for what you're saying is they don't have a long history of traditional advertising and marketing, and by nature, they want to do things that are disruptive and innovative. But with the growth and the success of these shows, there are absolutely bigger brands that are coming in every year. You know, we're currently working with Prudential and Schwab, two very big, you know, regulated industry companies that are doing it, and they're doing a fantastic job with it. So I think it's really more around the people in the marketing department and their mindset about how to approach these things and whether you can get to that point of, we're not going to talk about ourselves because no one wants to hear that. We're going to make this an audience first show.
So that's exactly the thing, right? Is we are working with a lot of brands that have a huge amount of expertise and experience in marketing right. Their products or marketing their services. and they're very, very, very good at it. A lot of the companies that we work with, though, don't have, again, this mindset of a media company. So that's where a little bit of, you know, tension can sometimes come up when you're trying to get a company to think like a media company and think about marketing a show, not marketing a product or a service, because that is a fundamentally different thing.
Right. So I have many questions about the creative process and how you promote the shows and find audiences and all those things. But first, let's take a couple of steps back and get the origin story. Both of you started in, I guess, public radio, right? So can you tell us your origin stories, how you ended up at Pacific Content?
Go for it, Dan.
Yeah, start with Dan.
So I started in radio, in campus community radio, and that's such a good fit with podcasting because in campus community radio, you can have an idea and it can be on air the next day. There's this very DIY, just put it out there mentality. So I started out in campus community radio and then spent about a decade at CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, making national public radio shows. And then a couple of years ago, I got a call from Steve and he said, hey, we're doing this thing. It's a little bit weird, but we think it's really exciting. And there's a moment happening right now. Do you want to come join? And it sounded really, really exciting. And I hopped on board.
And Steve, what did you think you needed in order to make this idea fly? Were there other companies out there doing branded content in podcasting when you decided to put this together?
There weren't. At least we were not aware of it. Like, I think we were the first company to just focus on doing this as our weird specialty. So we knew we needed really good storytellers and people who knew how to make audience first shows. We knew we needed to be able to think about how to make this valuable for the brands we work with and to meet their business goals. It's almost like two sides of a coin that you have to balance of, obviously it has to meet business and strategic goals or there's no one's going to sign up to do it. But part of that means lots of people have to listen to the shows.
Right.
So balancing the business and the audience side is kind of the secret sauce of figuring that out.
And what do you tell brands about the audience? I'm curious how you define it for people who maybe never participated in even audio, let alone podcasting, and for whom this is kind of, a void.
Well, I think a lot of what is appealing about podcasting for the brands that we work with are exactly the trends that we tend to see in some of these industry-wide numbers, right? The podcast audience writ large is attractive because it skews young and affluent and educated. And for a lot of the companies that we're working with.
You forgot good looking, I think.
Yes, exactly. No, but it's a very, very attractive audience. But I think, one of the things that we really focus on when we work with companies is this idea of not just going after the existing podcast audience, but figuring out ways to grow that audience industry-wide, right? Like we are working with large companies that have huge existing audiences of their own who don't self-identify as podcast listeners. And I think that's the opportunity, right? Is to be somebody's first experience with a podcast is incredibly powerful, right? So if we're working with Mozilla on a show and they can get their show IRL in front of a bunch of eyes and a bunch of ears that have never listened to a podcast and be somebody's first really great podcast experience, that means something really, really, really profound. So it's not necessarily about pitching the existing podcast audience. It's how can you as a brand grow the entire industry by bringing new people in through some of the channels that you already have access to?
So I'm curious, how do you or even do you guarantee an audience for these shows? Are you relying on the brand to reach its customers and say, here's this content for you? How do you get them listeners? And so I'm taking notes, by the way.
We're unusual. we don't guarantee any numbers at all, which I think is very unusual in the industry. Like, and it's, again, because we don't have a network and we're not selling you access to our audience, but we have a huge amount of very deep and nerdy expertise in helping brands build audiences. And that's, where Dan and I'm going to throw out some really lame acronyms here. Dan and I are the founding members of Pacific Content's DTF, which is the Distribution Task Force.
Sure it is. And sure it is, Stephen.
It is, yeah. We have hats. We have DTF hats.
I know, because you're Canadians, you're actually sincere about that.
We are. Yeah, so we have a Slack channel that is DTF. So Dan and I basically live and breathe ways to figure out how to take advantages of a lot of the, like, the secret strengths or the secret weapons that brands have to build audiences, which is our second acronym, which is WMDs, Weapons of Mass Distribution.
Nice.
Thank you. Very proud of that one.
Yeah.
It is so, you know, and Dan mentioned, you know, Mozilla as a great example. They have the Firefox browser. They can reach millions of people through the Firefox browser. And when a new podcast episode comes out, you open up a new search tab. Underneath the search box is a promo for the show. And because it's a show and not a piece of marketing, it has a pretty high conversion rate compared to other things that might go in there. And we get a lot of people listening to the show through that. You know, we just launched a show with Charles Schwab. They've got a magazine that reaches 2.5 million people. They've got, you know, branches all over the country. They've got a website where people go in and check their account balances all the time. These are all ways to be able to put something valuable that people are appreciative of in, you know, put it in front of them and get people listening to podcasts. So when we go in with a set of best practices and almost do like an audit of all the secret strengths inside a brand and be kind of, you know, almost tilt them a little bit to say, let's make them audience facing for getting people to listen to a show, it's remarkably effective. Like, we've been really surprised.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it's these weapons of mass distribution are just one piece of the pie. Alongside that, there are fairly standard best practices around what you do with your owned, earned, and paid channels. And I think there are lots of really smart ways to do tune-in style advertising for a new podcast. There are lots of really poorly executed ways to do that. So part of what we do is not just look for these huge existing owned channels like the Firefox web browser or like, you know, wandering into your local Charles Schwab branch, but, you know, really working with brands to figure out how do you market a podcast in a paid way or through an earned way, through some, you know, PR wins. And we've seen lots of examples of that as well.
Do you find that the budgets for paid marketing are going up as your clients realize that it's a kind of chaotic and very competitive landscape?
I think the budgets are different client to client. I would say they have been increasing, and it is, at this point, kind of table stakes. And I think where, you know, the smart money goes in is into really, really highly targeted paid advertising, especially when it comes to advertising in other podcasts, where there's a real alignment between the new show that a brand is launching and an existing audience. So we just launched a show with Red Hat, an enterprise Linux company. They are absolutely interested in reaching IT administrators, sysadmins, developers. Like, it's a pretty nerdy audience.
Yes.
No, exactly. And, you know, you could go for reach and you could advertise on some of the bigger shows. But what they did is they bought some spots on an episode of Security Now on Leo Laporte's Twit Network, which is exactly where their listeners or their desired listeners already are, right?
Yes.
Huge overlap between the audience that Red Hat wants to reach and who Leo already has listening to that show. So I think, you know, a big part of what we try to do is help brands make really, really smart decisions about where their paid dollars go.
Now, the other really interesting thing too is, you know, when you're talking about some of the advantages of a brand, just when we're talking about Seth Godin earlier, I'm just going to keep name dropping him through the whole episode.
Well, that's all right. He gets a dollar every time someone says that. So go ahead.
Seth Godin.
Yes.
All right. But having a recognizable name hosting the show goes a long way to being able to build an audience quickly, because it comes with authenticity and credibility. So, yeah, whether it's Seth Godin, you know, we have a show that we do with Dell Technologies that's hosted by Walter Isaacson. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who wrote the Steve Jobs biography and Da Vinci biography. Like, he's a real expert in innovation, and that's what the show is about. It instantly brings this level of credibility to it. And, you know, Walter because he's hosting, got invited to go on CBS This Morning for 10 minutes to talk about the podcast. It was crazy. It went straight to number one business podcast for like a week after that. That's also a really interesting area where brands can think about budget and being able to build like mm-hmm. like a really big show.
Now, you guys launched Pacific Content in 2015. Since that time, a lot of companies in the podcasting space have A, formed, and then B, created their own brand studios. There's Gimlet Creative, Panoply Custom, Pineapple Studios. We have our mid-roll branded studio, which is where the Akimbo show comes from. Why do you think that's happening? And is it good for the industry? Does it give you concern? Like, what's your take on all that growth?
I love it. I mean, you think about the number of ad agencies in the world, that there's no shortage of work out there.
Yeah.
I think the more that podcasting shows that this is a wonderful place for brands and it's not just a one-size-fits-all solution, that for some it's going to be doing these really smart advertising campaigns and thinking differently about advertising. Some is going to be sponsorship models. Some is going to be making your own podcasts. This is an industry that is still evolving and is still early. I think it's really, really exciting to see a lot of people thinking outside the box with solutions.
And Dan. Yeah,
I think it was, it was Matt Lieber on The Wolf Den who coined the term co-opetition. It feels a lot like co-opetition right now. And I think, you know, the existence and the emergence of more and more of these companies or parts of companies that work with brands signals greater brand interest in the medium, and that is growing the pie for everybody.
Can I ask you both, since you are, we talked about Gimlet Creative and Panoply and Pineapple. I feel as if I have some sense of what their house sound is, each of those studios, even though their brand products are a little or a lot different from the shows they make for editorial, purely editorial reasons. Do you guys have a house style? And if so, what is it, and how do you adapt it to your clients?
It's mostly filled with Canadian hoser accents.
Perfect.
Tell me about that.
It's highly customized, right? Like part of the development process, when brands call us up and are interested in working with us, we usually start with a 1 or 2 day development session, and some of the questions that come up around those development sessions are about exactly this. What does the show sound like? What does it feel like? Who do we imagine on our sort of short list of amazing guests or amazing hosts for the program? Mm-hmm. So it really is client by client quite different. We have in-house sound designers and we have in-house producers and writers who are really, really great by virtue of having a lot of experience working in a lot of different places. They're great at adapting. And I think what we strive for is not necessarily a house sound, but the ability to work with a brand to bring their voice to life through a podcast. So I don't know, Steve, would you say we have a house sound?
I think you kind of nailed it, is that we're not, like compared to like a Gimlet or Panoply or Pineapple, we are not really a public-facing brand. Like nobody's thinking like, well, I can't wait to hear the next Pacific Content show. when we do our job well, we're invisible. So our job isn't to, you know, people aren't coming to us to get a Pacific Content sound. They're coming to us for kind of deep collaboration, for us being able to bring, you know, I think as Dan said, like bring their voice to life. So in a way, I think we're maybe proudly being able to be more chameleon-like in fitting the brand voice and the brand values into a unique voice every time.
Well, listen, we're going to take a minute here because although Pacific Content doesn't sell ads, Midroll sure does. So we have to take a break and take care of those, and we'll be right back with more and with the Pacific Content team. So when we started the show and we talked about shows we were jealous of and both Chris and I wanted to pick Today Explained, neither of us knew at the time that we were going to have an ad in the middle of the show for Today Explained.
The show is carefully planned, but here things just seem to fall apart.
You know when you see a notification on your phone, you're like, what the fuck? Well, Vox is here to explain those fucks. You probably know Vox as the folks who distill all the noise about news, policy, culture, and everything that matters into perfect explainers. Now they have a new podcast with an episode every afternoon called Today Explained. Today Explained answers the big big questions about today's news. And honestly, they wanted to call it What the Fucks, but they couldn't because that name was basically already taken. Seriously, Today Explained is a really, really nice and fun to listen to show that wraps up and explains that day's news stories in a way that will actually also make you smile, even when it's really shitty news, which, let's be honest, it's 2018. It probably is. Subscribe to Today Explained in your favorite podcast app like Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Today Explained will be waiting for you, whether you're winding down or psyching up.
Whoa.
You heard?
I even saw the hand gestures. I don't believe them. That's all. And we're back from ads, the thing we do in between content, with Dan Meisner and Stephen Pratt from Pacific Content. We were just talking about the house sound or lack thereof that you guys employ. And I think it makes sense, of course, to try to tailor everything you do to the needs of the client. I wonder, what does it feel like to be inside a purely brand studio? There's a fair amount, I would say, of snobbery. And maybe that's a controversial opinion. I don't think so. There's a lot of snobbery in podcasting at times. And I wonder—
Especially in this studio.
Well, yeah. Boy, that shirt is ugly. No, and I'm wondering, how do you manage your like position in the world, and how do you see yourselves, and where are you in this sort of creative, cooperative and yet rivalrous group of people?
I'm curious for Dan's take on this too, because he's been more in the production side as well as the audience development side. But I can say for me, like, somebody asked me a while ago, like, boy, it must be so limiting and, you know, creatively to be working only with brands. And I loved my time at the Canadian Public Broadcasting Company. I spent about a decade there, and I worked on a digital music service. And for 10 years, the only shows I could make were about Canadian music, like independent Canadian music. And it was
sounds
awesome.
Like a living hell, Stephen. No, I'm just kidding.
It was amazing,
Justin Bieber. It was great. It was all the Canadian greats.
I'm just teasing.
All the good.
Yeah. Naked Ladies.
We had the greatest Celine Dion channel. but it's interesting. Like, we are working with some really amazing clients and a bunch of really diverse subject matters for our shows, like where you could be doing something about cybersecurity or the future of work or bravery, depending on the day. And we're getting budgets to be able to make really high quality shows. And we're, you know, I think and this is just my own, again, nerdery, but like being able to dig in with these brands and figure out how to grow audiences in non-traditional ways, it's like hugely interesting and satisfying. You know, creatively and on a challenge-wise. And I think there is, for sure, people who look down their nose at not doing original programming, but I feel like our team loves it because they're making awesome shows that they're proud of, and yeah, they're getting a lot of listeners for it. If they were making infomercials or if they were making pieces of marketing, I don't know that they would feel as good about it.
Well, that is my favorite part, is having people's conceptions or misconceptions about what a branded podcast is changed, not by me explaining it to them, but by them listening to the shows themselves. I think branded podcasts or branded content or content marketing or whatever label you want to stick on this category of stuff sometimes has a smell to it. And I love sending potential guests copies of past shows to hear for themselves. And when they hear that it is genuinely a show that provides value, when they hear that this is interesting, that it is hosted by somebody who knows what they are talking about and is incredibly authoritative in whatever world the show is about, the fact that it comes from a brand feels entirely natural. And I like when the work speaks for itself. Sometimes there's a bit of a hump getting people to sample something that does have, you know, the word brand in it. But once you're over that hump, I think people very quickly realize that at least the stuff coming out of Pacific Content and a lot of the stuff that I hear coming out of other shops is really very good stuff made by extremely talented people who have a long track record of making excellent programming.
So your website says that Pacific Content believes in, and I'm quoting now, a world where all forms of marketing and advertising are opt-in. I only have two questions. One, what the hell does that mean? And two, how are you accomplishing that at Pacific Content?
I think it goes, you know, it's that idea of like, are you interrupting people with something that they don't want? You know, that's not me opting in to saying, I would like to hear from you on a regular basis. It's that idea we've talked about around, are you making something that people love and that they value, that they're voluntarily saying, yeah, you know what, I'd like more of this. That's what we're striving for, is to say, create value in the world. Don't think that you have the power just to interrupt and shove something in people's face, because they have so much power today to skip all of that.
Right.
And whether it's an ad, whether it's an original show, whether it's, you know, a blog post, whatever it is, think audience first and make people happy with it. No matter what form you're using of marketing, put the audience first.
Okay, I can't argue with that. I was going to ask you, if you don't mind, and either one of you could answer this question, walk me through the process of acquiring and onboarding a client. We could pick a company at random. Let's just say it's Microsoft, and you mm-hmm. wanted to, they've said, yes, we want to do this. Tell me what happens next.
So we will usually talk to people and give them a lot of information about what it means to do a branded podcast or an original podcast with a brand, you know, where they're coming in eyes wide open, that there's a lot of commitment on their side that they're going to have to make to be able to say, we're going to make a show. It's not going to be about us. It's not going to be, you know, our executives interviewing people for, you know, an hour inside a show. And you're going to put some promotion behind it. You're going to use your own channels. Like, those are all almost like qualifiers before we kind of get to the table. Mm-hmm. I think, as Dan was saying, we usually start off by going to their offices for a couple days and doing a 2-day strategy session that digs into the brand, where we can learn a ton about the brand voice and the values and the target audience and why they want to make a podcast mm-hmm. and what success would look like. And then we take them through a collaborative program development workshop with our two teams, where we answer a lot of the questions around what it means to make a great podcast.
Let me interrupt you there for one second. When you talk about what success looks like, is there a standard answer there? Especially since you're not focused on how many downloads the podcast is getting. What are your clients typically looking for? What do they tell you success is going to look like?
It depends on the client. I mean, sometimes it does come down to, we've got X number of downloads or X number of subscribers in mind, and we want to hit that. Sometimes that's based on their own cursory research. Sometimes it's based on past podcast projects that they've worked on. For other clients, it's about other ways of measuring what works, right? This is why things like Apple's podcast analytics beta is so incredible, because, you know, up until a couple of months ago, we knew that people were downloading the shows. We had no idea whether anybody was actually listening to them or how far into an episode
right.
somebody was getting. And now we've got this incredible signal. Granted, it's not 100% of the pie, but it's a pretty considerable chunk of the pie. We can go to them and say, not only are people downloading these episodes, and not only are they hitting play, but they are making it 85, 90, 95% of the way through an episode on average. That is incredibly powerful, especially when you are working with companies whose sort of previous branded efforts have been maybe blogging or making videos. Nobody watches all the way through
right.
a video in the way that people are listening all the way through a well-made podcast.
I can't get listeners to listen through Lex's first question in this show, usually. So that's astonishing. No.
Is anyone still listening now? The LinkedIn is very high.
Yeah,
it's bad.
So, I mean, some clients weight these things differently, right? If you are Red Hat and you're interested in reaching developers, specifically open source software developers, you're not going to be able to reasonably expect serial-like numbers, because the people you're trying to reach is much smaller. So in that case, things like engagement, average completion, how many people actually hit play after downloading, that kind of stuff matters. Things like, did somebody listen to the show and then go download the white paper? Did somebody listen to the show and then sign up for the newsletter to get the additional information that we said we would send them? Those kinds of things we look at. So client by client, it is very, very different. But part of our job is to figure out what metrics matter most and then figure out how to effectively report back on that stuff.
Yeah, one of the really interesting things is that, you know, why brands are coming into the space is very different than, you know, the way that most of the rest of the podcast industry works is they're not in it for revenue streams in the podcast. So their goal is not necessarily to have as many listeners as possible so that they can have a high CPM to sell ads. A lot of them are in there because they want to raise brand awareness or they want to position their brand in a different way or effectively or change the perception of their brand. So it's really up at the top of that marketing funnel. And getting research, we have an amazing research partner that we work with called Audience Insights, and they have developed research that will get a panel of the target audience, have them listen to the shows, and then answer surveys about the show that will get a lot of information for a brand about, like, you know, did you love it? Did you like it? Would you listen to more? Would you tell other people about it? Did you learn something? Do you remember who brought you this? What do you associate?
What's your name? Do you remember your name? Yeah. What day is this? Who's president? Yeah.
What's your sign?
Don't ask him
it goes very deep.
But the results on that are off the charts compared to anything else that brands do in other mediums, like the equivalent of a net promoter score or a brand lift. They're really, and I'm sure it'll be the exact same thing. You have your version of that, and Gimlet has their version of that, whatever. But podcasting is crazy effective for driving awareness of the brands and changing the way people think about them. If you listen to a fantastic show for half an hour and you really love it, no one's going to think worse of the brand. It only goes up.
Yes, that's exactly. Yes, people are in part just grateful that the great content is available to them to listen to thanks to that brand. So it's like, thank you, ZipRecruiter, for making this Seth Godin thing possible. I think you really get halo effect just from that alone.
Yeah.
And so Steve and Dan, I want to use the power of our dozens of listeners to pose an aspirational.
My mom.
Exactly. No, my mom doesn't listen to this show. Are you kidding? She's busy playing bridge. I want to use the power of this audience to ask you about, to each name one brand you would love to do a podcast for and why. I'm really curious about the one that you haven't reached yet, but you think, man, we could make a great show with that brand. Steve, go.
I would probably pick Tesla. Maybe Tesla or Airbnb, like somebody who's doing something really different and has a strong point of view around where the world is going. Like I always think about, my whole career has been in editorial and thinking about like, where are the amazing stories that are, you know, where are the wells of amazing stories to tell, where people have a point of view and they're unique in the industry and they have the ability to build something that could truly be people's favorite show they've ever listened to. But I have to say, like, having said Tesla or Airbnb or something like that, it could equally be some company we've never heard of that just brings this magic idea to the table because of who they are.
I have to tell you, I think a Tesla show would be a musk listen. I just want to put that out there.
Oh. Hello!
Hello! Yeah. Well, this show's over. No, all right. What about you, Dan? What about you?
I'm a bit of a music nerd. I would love to do a show with Fender, the guitar maker, the musical instrument maker. I mean, when you think about people's relationships with their instruments, there's such rich history and storytelling there. And I think where Pacific Content brings a lot of strength is in, you know, storytelling and pulling these kinds of stories out of brands. So I think, you know, a company like Fender that just lends itself to the ear has this rich history about itself, but also its impact on popular music for decades and decades and decades.
Dan, I would name that show Don't Fret, just in case you were wondering. That's my advice to you.
Hello!
If you guys are hiring just a title guy, I'm there for you.
Yeah, in fact, we'd give them to you. We'd loan them to you for an extended period if that's helpful.
We'll bring Lex in to do some punch-ups on our show titles.
It's perfect.
So I have to say, as the branded podcast nerds or original podcast with brands nerds, I want to hear what you guys are doing and how it's different than us, because I've been super curious about, obviously, Seth Godin, but also the Cal Fussman and the Damon John shows that you're doing all with ZipRecruiter.
You know, we did a couple branded projects over the past call it 2 years. We did a show with Casper that Chris Gethard hosted for us, which turned out really well. We have a show that we did with the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
And Aparna Pictures.
That's right. We did for the film Detroit. And we started seeing that we had advertisers. You mentioned ZipRecruiter. There's a couple others, Squarespace is another one, who really wanted more business inventory than we had. And when they looked at business, they wanted just entrepreneurial advice and smart business people talking about how to live your best life or do successful entrepreneurial things. And since we didn't have those shows in-house to sell them, we came up with the idea. It's actually our head of sales, Corey Colessa, who said we should just build these shows. And so it was a little bit of matchmaking. First, we reached out to Damon John and to Cal and to Seth, and we said, hey, would you be interested in building a show? And we can guarantee you this much income because we'll only make the show if we can find an advertiser who wants to use it as a branded project. And each of them had different takes on what they wanted their show to be, which makes sense. And then we took those ideas to brands and said, look, we're going to make this show, and it can be entirely owned by you or not. And as you mentioned, ZipRecruiter was all over the Seth Godin concept, the Damon John concept. Both Zip and Squarespace together are kind of presenting the Cal Fussman show. And really, those were all just opportunistic, knowing that we had advertisers hungry for inventory in those spaces, in those areas. We said, let's build those shows together. And then when you get partners like Damon and like Seth, who are just eager to share their insights, you can make a really great show. I will tell you quite candidly, it's not my favorite direction. Because, you know, when we were first trying to build out our brand studio, you know, I'll use an example that we never actually ran with, but it was, hey, we could make a road trip show where we put a funny host and a person from the company in a car together, and they drive around the country, and the guy who's from the car company can talk about the car while the host just talks about whatever he wants, and that'll be a great branded project for an auto company. And then when we would pitch this to auto companies, they would say, you could do that for any auto company, which is exactly the point from our side and exactly what they didn't want. So that's why I was a little bit apprehensive when we started saying, let's build some business shows and then figure out which advertisers want them. But we were able to accomplish it in a way where the brands were able to say, yes, this is exactly up our alley. This is the kind of show we want to be associated with. And yes, we want to present it with you. And then they get, you know, some degree of editorial control. They have influence over whom we're going to be interviewing on the show and what guests and what kinds of guests make sense and don't and that sort of thing. So it's, but that's kind of our story. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, for sure. And it, like, I guess this, I mean, it seems like this is becoming a bigger part of your business. Like, where do you, I'm curious for you as mid-roll, where you see branded fitting into the larger industry and inside your company as a mix of original and brands?
You know, we're going to keep doing it. It's, I would say, you know, your company is entirely built on making branded content. We have original shows that we make that are ad supported. We've got the Stitcher Premium business and merch and live events and all those things. I would say that the branded content space remains a percentage, which is not a very helpful number, but it remains a percentage of kind of our view on the ad sales side, and we want to keep doing it. We have one brand studio producer in-house. I imagine by the end of the year, we'll need a second. But, you know, we want to keep making those shows, and like you, I always quote Chris Bannon when I'm in pitch meetings on these projects, where I say, you know, every time we want to make a show, Chris is like, we should make this a Peabody Award-winning show. We don't, to exactly to your point earlier, we don't want to make an infomercial. We want to make a show that listeners are going to love, and that's going to benefit the brand because listeners love the show. And so anytime we can find opportunities to make a show with a brand that we think is a show we'll be proud of, then we're going to want to do it.
Good answer.
And this isn't awkward, but I quote Chris Bannon with the same line in all of our pitch meetings, too.
It's not awkward. I'm just wondering where my royalties are.
We send them to Seth Godin.
Yes. Well, before we let you go, I do want to ask you, too, if you, since you have had experience both in the branded space and certainly editorially at the CBC, is there something you wish you had told a newbie, a starter, someone had told you maybe when you were starting that would have been more helpful over the course of your careers? Dan?
I, as somebody just getting into radio, would phone people up and ask them for advice or meet them for coffee and ask them for advice. And what I would tell a young person looking to get into audio programming or podcasting right now is talk to somebody who is just a couple years ahead of you in their career. It's great to talk to veterans. It is great to talk to people who have 10 or 20 or 30 or more experience in the industry. But if you want to get your finger on the pulse of where the business is at right now, talk to somebody who got a job or got a really incredible gig 18 months ago or 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Don't talk to an old person like me.
Words to live by as an old person. And Steve?
I think I would say make something awesome. No one will listen to anything mediocre anymore. So strive for awesome and don't stick to what you think a podcast could be or should be. Like, we're still so early and there's so many formats of shows that haven't been done yet. Get creative and make something you're super, super proud of. And, you know, take lessons from, like, you know, S-Town is based on the structure of a book. You know, the true crime shows are often mapped on TV. What hasn't been done yet, and go do that instead of copying what other successful shows are.
Oh, that's good advice. Well, thank you both so much for your time. My first question that I want to make sure we get to before we close is, where can our listeners follow you online? How can they find you?
The Pacific Content website is probably the best place, pacific-content.com.
And that's the word hyphen spelled out.
No. That's correct. Yes. Yeah. hyphencontent.com.
Well, thank you both, and congrats for all the success you've had.
Yeah.
I want to thank Harry Nelson and Jared O'Connell in the booth for making the show sound as good as it does, despite me and Chris. You can subscribe to The Wolf Den at earwolf.com, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget, in whatever app you're using, rate the show. You can rate it honestly. We can take it. We want your honest, unvarnished feedback.
I'm the glue that holds this show together, for God's sake.
You are. I don't know what I'm doing here.
Clearly. Scott Aukerman here. Are you a fan of the podcast You Talking You Two to Me? Well, I hope you are. If you are, make sure to check out Adam Scott and I have a new show, Are You Talking R.E.M. Re-Me? That's right. It's a brand new show with a brand new title. Join us as we discuss the music and impact of the band R.E.M. through an album-by-album analysis. That sounds very nerdy, but it's actually fun. We break down everything and nothing about the band. Listen to the limited series Are You Talking R.E.M. Re-Me Wednesdays on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and earwolf.com. This is good rock and roll. Use it!
This has been an Earwolf production. Executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Risa Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.